Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death. This episode is on my playlist, Dining with the Disappeared, where we talk about people who have vanished. We talk a little bit about the people themselves, their lives, and how they disappeared. I'm really working on my marketing skills, so I would like to ask you if you want to support me, make sure you're subscribed to the channel, hit the like button if you like the videos, and you can always join my Patreon. The end goal on Patreon is to raise money for police departments that have cold case DNA in storage that cannot be tested because there's no money to test it. We want to help with that. If you want to sign up for a buck or two a month, that's fine with me. I just appreciate you being here, and I appreciate your support. I'm Stacey Lee. Let's begin. Months back, I made a commitment to continue to focus on and cover cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women. And today, we're going to be discussing one of those many, many tragic stories. Last time I talked about this issue, I had four or five viewers leave nasty comments about it being woke bullshit. I've really grown to hate that word, woke, because people don't even know what it means. And those comments infuriated me. I would really like to know how talking about something that is not only true, but is terrifying and tragic for so many people is woke. So I'm going to give you some statistics on missing and murdered Indigenous women so we have facts. Indigenous women, Native American women, are murdered at a rate 10 times higher than any other ethnicity. Not once, not double, not three times, 10 times. That statistic is mind-blowing. More than 4 out of 5 Indigenous women will experience domestic violence in their lifetime, personal violence. 4 out of 5. That is just really tough to wrap my head around. And the rate that Indigenous people, especially Indigenous women, go missing is much higher than that of the general population of all other races and ethnicities in America. Take a look at this list. This is from one website. There are many websites that have this information, and not all of them feature the same people. I am a true crime content creator, and race plays a role in why some people become victims. So you are not going to bully me out of talking about facts and talking about race and the fact that it does play a role in why some people become victims just because you don't want to acknowledge that racial issues exist. We do truth and we do facts here at Dining with Death. And if you don't agree with that, I would challenge you to leave a comment and let's have a discussion as to why you think that's not the case. Because if you knew the hours and hours and hours that I spend researching and vetting the information that I put on this channel, have I always been 100% right? No. Have I made a couple of mistakes? Yes. When I make those mistakes, I own up to them, I explain why they happened, and I try to make sure I don't make them again. But what we're not going to do is pretend that talking about race or talking about income level does not affect whether or not people become victims of true crime. And just because some of you have your head so some of you are incapable of talking about anything without bringing politics or controversy or conspiracy theories into it, you're not going to have a good time here. Because here we do facts and here we do truth. And the truth is that Indigenous women are victims 10 times the rate that other ethnicities are. And that's a problem. And we're going to talk about it. So let me settle down and let's get started with today's very real and very tragic story. One of many. Tamara Chipman was born in Prince Rupert, British Columbia, and was a member of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Her parents say she was an energetic child and would often get into a little trouble. She loved spending time with her grandfather, Jack, and Tamara would tag along with him as he went to work repairing heavy machinery. When Grandpa Jack died, Tamara had a very difficult time dealing with his death, and it affected her throughout her teenage years. Tamara was not someone to back down from a fight, and she was known to get into scraps here and there, but nothing too serious. She was known as someone with a great sense of humor, and she fiercely loved her family. When Tamara was about 18, her Aunt Gladys moved to Terrace, where the family was living, and Tamara would spend hours with her aunt talking about her dreams for the future and what she wanted to do with her life. Gladys had actually moved back to Terrace in order to pursue criminal charges against a man who had abused her when she was a child. And Tamara was very supportive, helping her aunt however she could in seeing that this man was prosecuted. This abuser was convicted, and Gladys and Tamara were proud to have taken someone so dangerous off the streets. When Tamara was 19, she gave birth to her son, Jaden. Being a single mother was difficult for Tamara, and her family noticed that she was stressed a lot of the time. She also started to spend time with a crowd that her family was not fond of. Her mother was concerned that there were people in the crowd who were involved in the drug scene. And as Tamara's personality began to change, her mother was convinced that Tamara was too. She looks back at that time and says it was just a very difficult time for Tamara, and they were all very concerned about her. Tamara's parents were separated. Her mother, Corey Millwater, was living in Prince Rupert, and her father, Tom Chipman, was living in Terrace. And Tamara would split her time between the two cities, visiting each of her parents regularly and frequently. In 2005, Tamara went to visit her mother. She'd been in Prince Rupert for about 3 days. She'd gotten a ride there because her car had broken down a couple weeks previous to her visit, so she was there without transportation. One day, one of Tom, Tamara's father's friends, saw Tamara hitchhiking towards Terrace, and it concerned him. He had a right to be concerned. The day he saw Tamara was September 21st, 2005, and she was never seen again. Tamara had spent the evening celebrating her 22nd birthday with her friends at a local bar called the Transit Hotel. Witnesses say that Tamara left the bar around 2 a.m. and she was walking away with a man that no one knew, a man that to this day has never been identified. Then Tamara was later seen walking on Kootenay Street, not far from the bar she had just left. And that is the last confirmed sighting of her. There is, as is often the case, conflicting information online about this disappearance. Some reports say that Tamara was reported missing a few days after her night at the bar, and some reports say that it was actually months later because her father was on a fishing trip that lasted for weeks and he did not realize she was gone. I tend to believe the former because Tamara had a job. She was working in a factory at the time, and she also had a group of friends that would notice if she was gone. At any rate, the alarms were raised and the disappearance sparked a large-scale search effort. Volunteers scoured the area around Prince Rupert for any clues or signs of Tamara's whereabouts. The search became one of the largest ever conducted in the area, and that is nice to know. Very often these cases are not treated seriously, and very little is done when Indigenous women go missing, so it was a nice change and made me hopeful that better investigations are on the horizon. Tamara did have a court case that she was facing. She had got into a little bit of a fight and she had been charged with simple assault. So in the beginning, some people thought maybe Tamara had taken off because she was worried about going to court. But as time went on, her family said, she would never do that to us. She would never take off, not communicate with us, not tell us where she was. She knows how much we would worry about her. And the police believed them and they became convinced that something really bad had happened to her. Tamara's father got very involved in the investigation when he did return home from his fishing trip. By this time, it was November. He contacted the RCMP and a joint investigation was launched between the RCMP and the police in the Prince Rupert and Terrace areas. For months, Tom Chipman and other volunteers walked up and down the highway Tamara would have been hitchhiking on, in hopes of finding some clue as to what happened. Despite the extensive searches and investigations, no trace of Tamara has ever been found. There have, however, been some developments. Since Tamara's disappearance, two men and one woman have come forward, stating that they saw Tamara hitchhiking and watched as she was picked up. The woman claims that the vehicle was driving towards Terrace and that she watched as one of the men in the car began arguing with Tamara and then hit her. There were also rumors that Tamara was strangled to death in that car. Someone else came forward and stated they were told Tamara had been killed after being picked up and that the man who killed her took her body to the forest and buried her. Upon hearing this, the police initiated a very intensive search of that area. They brought in dogs and volunteers, but found nothing. As I'm sure many of you are aware, there is a stretch of highway up in Canada called the Highway of Tears. It has been named that because so many people have gone missing while hitchhiking or driving on that road. Now, the important thing about Tamara Chipman's story, besides the fact that she's another person that's missing, it was kind of the thing that pushed the Indigenous community over the edge. Tamara's case, she had such strong family ties there, and people were so tired of seeing this happen over and over with nothing being done that they really got involved. There was such a big push for more action to be taken regarding the Highway of Tears and all of these disappearances that the RCMP formed a special task force. The task force is known as E-PANA, that's capital E-PANA, and it was created to investigate the series of unsolved murders and disappearances along the Highway of Tears. The purpose of the task force is, quote, to determine if a serial killer or killers is responsible for murdering young women traveling along major highways in BC, British Columbia.
So let me just ask you about Tamara Chipman. What did that case mean to you?
Tamara Chipman case?
Yeah.
Well, it meant a lot. It meant a lot in this regard because, You know, working with her family and her mom, her dad, her aunt, Gladys, right. And I mean, that file started the Highway of Tears.
Right.
That started that movement. That was it. That was the last straw for the Indigenous communities in northern BC. So that means a lot that you know, you always want to look for something out of a tragedy. And out of that tragedy came that movement and more awareness to what was happening to some female Indigenous girls in northern BC. So that's a positive thing, but it's frustrating too for me because we didn't bring a full resolution. Well, we didn't to the family, and that's always bothered me.
And does it still bother you now? I mean, how do you deal with something like that? I mean, one of these cases where that you're close to, to the family, obviously. Yeah. How do you deal with that as an officer?
Well, you know, we're humans, and you invest yourself emotionally and physically into a lot of the files, some more than others. But when you spend, you know, 3-4 years, 5-6 years, and then, you know, as the time goes on, the investment is high, and you want to succeed, you want to deliver for the family, and we weren't able to. But we did advance. There was a tremendous amount of work that got done on that file.
Yeah.
But I'm proud of the investigators that worked hours and hours and hours on that file. But it's at where it's at.
As of 2021, the case remains open, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police continue to receive tips and information about Tamara's disappearance. Her family and loved ones continue to hope for answers and some type of closure. Her son is now grown and I'm sure misses his mother very much. Tamara's family misses her very much. So please, if you know anything at all that would help bring closure to this or any other case on the Highway of Tears, please call the E-PANA tip line at 1-877-543-4822. You can remain anonymous. I want to send love to Tamara's friends and family from our community here at Dining with Death and let them know that we're doing what we can here to share the story and to keep Tamara's name and face fresh in the memories of people in the area. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, Dining with the Disappeared. Please hit that like button if you like the video and stick around and subscribe to support me. Again, you can join my Patreon if you'd like to. Thank you for being here. I sure appreciate your support. Stay safe, my friends, and be kind to each other. And I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!